Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 27th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Holland. Yes, we are going to have to start off today with another look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. And all of these stories are a bit more complex than some, so this is not a headline review, but it's a look first at the good. There's certainly a lot of bad and ugly in here, too, and the background is necessary just to get us to the good. And it has to do with what looks, again, like another very obviously rigged election. This time a primary in Colorado, and oh yes, would you believe there are Dominion voting machines involved? What else? And the usual last-minute chicanery that we're kind of getting used to. I've talked about this story before, but the background goes like this, courtesy of Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit. On Tuesday, June 28th, a no-name political operative who just happens to sit on the board of directors for Mark Zuckerberg's private election mafia called the Center for Tech and Civic Life, CTCL, out of nowhere won the Republican primary for Colorado Secretary of State, which is kind of important because the woman that was the no-holds-barred frontrunner, Tina Peters, achieved quite a bit of visibility for pointing out just how rigged the Colorado 2020 election was, and having saved the data to prove it. She was the Mesa County clerk who was persecuted, and I use that term explicitly, by the far-left Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold for contesting the Colorado election results, and of course for that they call her an election denier. So she ran for Secretary of State in an attempt to blow the whole thing wide open. Well, the primary was the first step, and you know darn well Dominion and all those on the left who want her silenced aren't about to put up with that. So we start with what looks like the rigging of that primary election with a story from investigative reporter Emerald Robinson, who discussed the truly unbelievable primary results just 2 days after they were rigged, after they were counted, or maybe not counted. Popular candidate Tina Peters was not only leading in the polls, she was literally blowing them away with a 15-point lead on her nearest competitor, Pam Anderson, before the, whatever happened on that fateful night. But in what's being called another Raffensperger special, the deep state candidate somehow came back from 15 points down to win by an astounding 20 points over Tina Peters, in spite of absolutely no evidence that that was even possible. The big news was that an Australian businessman named Mike O'Donnell somehow got a full 28% of the vote, even though polling showed he had no support, had almost no campaign followers, and had raised less than $5,000. He went from being a non-factor in the three-person race to grabbing 28% of the total vote. Enough, of course, to swing the election to the unpopular horse in the distant second slot, allowing the billionaire's minion to win with 43% of the total vote. Again, I have to say, as allegedly counted, anyway. Not too long before the primary election, Pam Anderson was not only losing to Tina Peters in all polling and fundraising metrics, but her campaign was basically broke. Even a very liberal site called Colorado Polls admitted just before the election that her surprisingly anemic fundraising is just more evidence that Pam Anderson is a candidate without a constituency. But she'll certainly be an easy mark, observes your increasingly cynical host, for the leftist socialist candidate in the general election. And I can't help but think, if everybody knows that the primary was rigged in order to get her to the general election anyway, she can hardly complain about any rigging that happens then. Which would just be lipstick on a pig at that point anyway. But wait, there's far more. Colorado Polls also said that in the Republican primary for Colorado Secretary of State, all the momentum just before the election is now with Tina Peters. By every available metric, they wrote, Peters is the front runner. She dominated the vote at the state assembly, winning 61% of the delegates. By the way, Anderson didn't even show up there. And she now holds a commanding lead in fundraising. Peters is getting orders of magnitude, more earned media attention, coverage that even might be perceived as negative by some, they note, because of her criminal case, is not a major liability with GOP primary voters, and to the extent that they've heard of her, a large percentage see her as a hero. As a matter of fact, TGP notes that Pam Anderson was so unpopular that not only did she not attend the Republican Assembly, she was a write-in candidate and barely even made the ballot. In other words, she was wildly unpopular among Republicans. So how did she pull off this so-called miraculous 35-point swing on primary day with no money and actually not even any endorsements? I'm sure you can probably guess, but given that this election primarily was about rigging of elections, and arguably whether it will continue to be done with impunity, maybe I just need to say three words. Dominion voting machines. Well, all right, you're probably thinking by now, I see the bad, I see the ugly, where's the good in all of this? Answer. On July 12th, Tina Peters challenged the Colorado 2022 Republican primary results for Secretary of State and was told she had to raise more than $200,000 in order for the state of Colorado to allow a recount to be performed. She had to do it by today. And, appearing on Steve Bannon's show Tuesday to break the news, she did it, raising over $250,000 for the recount. There's the miracle. And remember, folks, that seems to be a number of times more than the alleged victor was able to raise for the entire campaign. Tina's optimistic, to say the least, but I do like what she told Steve Bannon, even if it may be a bit rosy. Quote, "This will bring down the evil empire." May it be so. As you can guess, folks, and as we've certainly already seen, this is a very much uphill fight. But the truth is, Tina Peters has raised visibility for the issue, certainly in Colorado. And more people, at minimum, are starting to realize the obvious. If this isn't corrected, why bother with elections? From the good, we go next to one that, no doubt about it, is just plain bad. And I'm talking about ground zero in more ways than one for bad. New York City, which has produced yet another PSA, public service announcement, and that's a misnomer for sure, urging people there to get out of Dodge, no, before they get nuked, hardly, to get their go bag ready after issuing their first nuclear attack PSA since the 1960s. Now, this one's covered a number of places, Hal Turner's radio show, The Gateway Pundit, True News, Natural News, and who knows how many others. And as you can probably expect, poking fun at the idiocy of it. Most people are shaking their heads and going, come on, if you're stupid enough to stay in New York City thinking they may be nuked, who are we kidding? But says Alicia Powell's write-up for TGP, corrupt politicians, and they got a million of them, are intent on perpetuating their state of emergency by employing booga, booga, booga scare tactics. Remember Rahm Emanuel's famous line, never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste. I guess you'd have to say, what's the point of having a communist puppet in the White House if you can't terrorize some New Yorkers with the idea that he's poking the bear and going to get them nuked? Earlier this month, New York City's Department of Emergency Management released their PSA guiding residents on how to respond in the event of a nuclear disaster. You know, the joke is probably better advice than they gave. Put your head between your knees and kiss your you-know-what goodbye. Yeah, don't look at the flash either, or flashes. The video advises New Yorkers that didn't have the foresight to get out of Dodge to get inside fast. Don't stay in your car, if you even have one in New York City. Shut all the doors and windows, if there's a basement, and probably not, since you may be up 30 stories or more anyway. And remove all your outer clothes if you're exposed indoors. Maybe you should get in the shower, but probably there won't be any water running. Maybe you should flip on your radio, but no, there won't be any power. Probably won't be any radio stations running either. Maybe you should call 911. Oops, no, there'll be 10 million other people trying, and none of them are going to get through. But, says the PSA, do follow the media. That is, if any of them are still there, if you have any way of hearing them, and if it was even worth listening to the first time. Good grief. What they don't tell you? Anything about iodine, for example, and what radiation might do to your thyroid and how to prevent poisoning on that score. This is idiotic, and it's arguably worse than nothing. But just maybe the worst advice in this whole asinine PSA is to pack yourselves a go bag that has, quote, everything you need to leave home in a hurry. Things like non-perishable snacks, bottled water, and copies of important documents. So I guess, folks, when they get stuck in the crush, along with 10 million other people, trying to evacuate an island or two in the middle of the worst nightmare any of them ever imagined, you can drink a bottled water while you wait for whatever happens next. Says the agency's website, according to TGP, make a plan that best suits your needs and the needs of your household, unquote. And if you have half a brain, you'll get out of Dodge now, rather than waiting till everybody else's plan overrides yours. New York City's latest communist mayor, Eric Adams, is defending the PSAs, saying, quote, I don't think it was alarmist. He should have just stopped after I don't think. I'm a big believer in better safe than sorry, and I take my hat off, he said, to that Office of Emergency Management. Meanwhile, violent crime in that gun control mecca is still up over 25% from just about a year ago, primarily little things like homicide, rape, robbery, and assault. You've seen some of the stories, no doubt. Sometimes it's most or all of the above. 92% of the people in the Big Apple, says a recent Breitbart poll, believe that crime is a, quote, serious problem. And you know what? They're probably right. Because as bad as the Marionette-in-Chief is jonesing to try to get the Russians to strike the Big Apple with a nuke, people there probably are more at risk of being robbed, raped, and murdered on any given day than they are being vaporized. Still, though, there's no shortage of people asking the obvious question. Why, oh why, are the powers that be in the world headquarters of globalist Big Brother doing so much jawboning all of a sudden about a nuclear attack? Which brings us to the ugly, and the really ugly. Says Natural News in just one of those stories, the food collapse and labor shortages are now affecting restaurants all over the country. What the pandemic didn't kill, it seems the Biden-Fuhrer's puppet masters are determined to finish off. It's not enough that people are seeing empty shelves and restaurants are short-staffed, which is true all over the country. Since the lockdowns that were intended to destroy the American economy, industry employment has recovered only slightly. And as of May, the National Restaurant Association says there's still about 750,000 jobs nationwide, about 6.1% of the workforce, short. No surprise, customers aren't happy about it either. But the real story, of course, and the really ugly, is the coming famine and how well planned it's been. From Dr. Mercola, as well as the Burning Platform, the elitist goal is to wipe out not only food, but especially good food. He begins with the Netherlands, and we've talked about this several times over the last few weeks, where the government of the largest meat exporter in the European Union intends to, not only not be the largest meat exporter, but pretty well shut it on down. According to the Dutch Parliament member Terry Baudet, this so-called green policy is really just a thinly veiled excuse for a land grab, and of course, furthering the famine. The government, he says, is following the script for the Great Reset, which requires weakening the country, making it more dependent on food imports rather than exports, and diluting nationalism by taking in, more immigrants. And since they do nothing if not plan ahead, well, where are you going to put all those people? They need to steal the land to house those people from the farmers first. What I thought was really interesting in his latest piece is some information about something called the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy Food Compass, unveiled in late 2021. And if it's Milton Friedman, he's probably rolling over in his grave. They've developed a new tool, says Tufts Now, to help consumers, food companies and restaurants, as well as cafeterias, to choose and produce healthier foods, and officials to be able to make sound public nutrition policy. Buckle up, folks, and listen to this bit of BS. Food Compass is a new nutrient profiling system developed over 3 years that incorporates cutting-edge science, and this sounds like Fauci science to me, folks. That means it may kill you. About how different characteristics of foods either positively or negatively impact health. The new Food Compass system was developed and then tested, and that too ought to raise eyebrows, using a detailed national database of over 8,000 foods and beverages consumed by Americans, scoring 54 different characteristics across 9 domains, representing different health-relevant aspects of food, drinks, and mixed meals, providing for one of the most comprehensive nutrient profiling systems in the world. Sounds incredible. Sounds unbelievable, right? And yeah, it really is. As Dr. Mercola points out, what this really looks like is a food ranking tool to mislead the masses. Who could have thought it? Its primary purpose, he says, seems to be to lead people away from wholesome natural foods and towards processed junk foods. Case in point, frosted mini wheat scores 3 times higher in their ranking than ground beef, 87 out of 100 compared to 26. But wait, writes Dr. Mercola, there's more, a whole lot more. The fact that, quote, egg substitute fried in vegetable oil gets a score above 0, he suggests, is frightening and a demonstration of their fundamental nutritional ignorance of the foundational fact that excessive omega-6 fats in the form of industrially processed seed oils are the most pernicious poisons in the food supply. And the high scores of French fries, Lucky Charms, Honey Nut Cheerios, chocolate-covered almonds, and almond M&Ms don't help either. Who in their right mind, he asks, can believe that M&Ms are healthier than whole food, pretty much any whole food. According to Food Compass, anything with a score below 30 should be minimized. So based on this tool, sick, you'd be healthier if you replace whole eggs, cheddar cheese, and ground beef with literally candy, which is nothing short of insanity. Based on this tool, governments, too, would be justified in restricting the marketing, and maybe this is the real intent, folks, of beef, egg, and cheese to children, while schools should be encouraged to load M&Ms into school lunches. And here's the big bottom line. Health, food security, independence, and freedom are what the global elitists, led by the WEF, World Economic Sick Forum, intend to destroy so that they can then roll out not just their Great Reset, but their new food system, too, based entirely on patented, and guess who owns most of those? If you can say Bill Gates, you're on the right track. Processed imitation foods, including lab-grown and plant or fungi-based so-called meats and clean, green protein alternatives, like cricket meal and mealworms. You've heard something like this before, right? You'll own nothing, you'll eat bugs, and you'll love it. The whole thing is, yeah, downright absurd, and your host will suggest genuinely ugly. I guess given the whimsical nature of some of the things we've talked about already today, let's reprise a sequence I call Tell Me Something I Don't Know.
And even though that implies a lot of these things are certainly something we've heard about before, what's interesting to me is that while they mostly have been denied by the waste stream, not only are they now being confirmed, but the information that's coming out really does add something to our understanding as well. So let's start in Europe, where the first story comes out of Germany, and researchers at Charité Berlin, Germany's top hospital and one of the largest in Europe, which has announced a, I hope you're sitting down, yeah, tell me something I didn't know, high rate of COVID-19 so-called vaccination side effects lasting months or longer, this based on a survey of about 40,000 Germans. They estimate serious side effects from the poison poke, and remember, folks, this is only so far at least, meaning these are short-term effects as opposed to longer-term things, at a rate of 8 serious side effects per 1,000 people that have been duped into taking the poison poke. That compares to what the Paul Ehrlich Institute, or PEI, Germany's so-called vaccine watchdog, estimated at a tiny fraction of that, 0.2 per 1,000. Which means all of this equates to an underreporting factor of about 40 to 1. They note this is about the same as the VAERS URF, estimated by Steve Kirsch quite a while ago. The study's lead researcher, Dr. Harold Mathis, estimated that 500,000 Germans, based on this data, have now experienced serious side effects following the not vaccination. And survey findings indicate that about 80% of the people with severe reactions eventually recover within 3 to 6 months, but for at least 20%, the symptoms persist. And it doesn't say in here how many of those symptoms turn out to persist for however long the victim manages to hang on. All of this, though, says the piece is a major embarrassment for the PEI, which has maintained all along that it's doing a thorough tracking, yeah, sure, of vaccine adverse events, and they're still denouncing as anti-vaxxers anyone who dares to question the bogus official numbers. By the way, Children's Health Defense, in their coverage, says this story is huge, even though you're not going to get that if you listen to the criminally negligent waste stream media networks. It's akin, they suggest, to researchers at Harvard Medical School coming forward and admitting that the Centers for Death and Control, or CDC, had been undercounting the serious adverse event rate by a factor of 40. The vaccine injury is real, and the vaccine injured actually need to be taken seriously and treated as opposed to ignored and hidden. Oh yeah, and there's this. Doctors, the kind that actually do care about patients and the injuries that they're causing, need to be able to voice their opinions openly without fear of retribution.
Now, there's a shocking concept. Hey, if that was actually to happen, folks, that would be telling us something we really didn't know. Hey, tell me something else I didn't know. Well, in America, Bidenflation is still hotter than a Texas heat wave. After March's surge in consumer prices, says Zero Hedge's coverage, analyst consensus is that CPI has peaked. Yeah, sure. April was expected to show a big slowdown from 8.5% year over year to only a ridiculously high 8.1% year over year. However, CPI still printed a lot hotter than expected, 8.3% year over year. And remember, folks, these are bogus official government figures. And bear in mind, they note that headline CPI is still at its second highest level since 1982. Core CPI was expected to rise 6.0% year over year in April, down from March, but instead rose a hotter than expected 6.2% year over year, and that 0.6% month over month spike in core inflation is bigger than all 67 estimates in the BBG Business Survey. So none of the so-called experts saw this one coming. Obviously, they've been listening too much to Jen Psaki, who would at least like you to believe they weren't all jonesing for this one from the get-go. The story goes on to say the biggest contributors to the blazing inflation were indexes for shelter, food, airline fares, and new vehicles, while the indices for medical care, recreation, and household furnishings and operations all also increased in April. Here they note are some of the stunning record price increases, starting with the home index, which rose a full 10.8% over the last 12 months, the largest increase since November of 1980. But if you really want to see inflation, folks, take a look at food. The index for meats, which they don't even want you to have anymore, poultry, fish, and eggs, increased 14.3% over the last year. That's the largest 12-month increase since May of 1979. And airline fares, too, continue to rise sharply, up almost 19% in April, the largest one-month increase since the inception of the series, all the way back in 1963 during the Kennedy administration, when a lot of the airlines weren't even flying jets yet.
Oh, yeah, and perhaps most worrying, notes Zero Hedge for the average Joe, real wages fell now for the 13th straight month. Item, and this one isn't the least bit surprising in the tell me something I don't know category, but it is particularly disgusting. Lindsey Graham is a lying scumbag. Oh, wait a second. That's your host's take on it. Here's the headline from the Daily Mail. Lindsey Graham is heard on tape praising Joe Biden as the best person to lead the country. Oh, yeah, he'll bring us together in a new audio while he was waiting, hidden out in a secure location during the so-called January 6th insurrection. The audio comes from an interview taken on January 6th in the bunker by New York Times reporters Jonathan Martin and Alex Burns, actually aired on CNN, in which the rhino Benedict Arnold can be heard telling the reporters, we'll actually come out of this thing stronger because, and he saw this as some kind of a great reset, saying it'll take a while, but people will calm down. I guess that means once they realized the country was dead already, and the sellout was over before it even started, right, Lindsey? And then he goes on to praise the senile communist Chinese puppet masquerading as president, saying he'll be maybe the best person to have, right? I mean, how mad can you get at Joe Biden? Hey, how mad can you get at Joe Stalin?
We'll actually come out of this thing stronger. Moments like this reset. It'll take a while. People have calmed down. People are, I don't want to be associated with that. This is a group within a group. And what this does is there'll be a rallying effect for a while where the country says we're better than this.
And Biden will help that, right?
Yeah, totally. He'll be a maybe the best person to have, right? I mean, how bad can you get at Joe Biden?
How mad can you get at a traitor like Lindsey Graham? And here's the question, folks. As we're already seeing, what difference would it make anyway? It's not like your vote matters, or as we've seen over and over again, like all of these people aren't playing for the same traitorous insurrectionist team. Yeah, tell me something I really didn't already know. One more in the tell me something I didn't know category, and interestingly enough, most of the coverage on this one seems to be missing the real story. Nothing short of a miracle, for example, says the Daily Mail, the incredible moment, and they have the video, that a passenger who's never sat behind the controls of an actual airplane before, en route to see his pregnant wife, landed at a Florida runway after the pilot literally slumped over out cold, or completely incoherent anyway, at the controls. And it turns out in this case, since it was a single-engine Cessna 208 Caravan flying from the Bahamas to Florida, it was a solo pilot, and that makes it a bit harder to cover something like this up, especially when it's so spectacular. Fortunately, it was nice weather, good VFR and a long runway. The passenger turned emergency pilot remained incredibly calm, and with the help of an air traffic controller, who also turned out to be a High Times certified flight instructor with a lot of experience in Cessnas, the landing came off nicely. He didn't actually know how to shut the plane down once it was all over, but still, everything came out fine. When it comes to tell me something I don't know, they're not going to tell us. The pilot, says the single reference in the piece, who remained unconscious and was taken to the hospital as a result of a sudden but unknown illness, and yeah, his condition too, remains unknown. Everything that's important seems to be unknown. Like whether or not this guy, like so many other pilots, was forced to take the Zyklon B injection and then managed to pass out, this time actually behind the controls of an airplane in flight. That, too, is unknown, but your host will suggest you can probably hazard a guess, and the odds would be in your favor to guess correctly. Yes, it's nice a passenger remained calm and conscious and alive and did a good job, but in this case, folks, when it comes to tell me something I don't know, it doesn't seem that they're even remotely about to. Bottom line, the message remains the same, and the more we learn about it, the more we realize they really have been lying, and really, what we're seeing here is one of the biggest deceptions in human history, too. So know who you serve, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.